All right, well, welcome to Planning Commission meeting. We will start with the public comments. Having none, we will move into a work session. It's a quick one.
It was a busy day today. All right, so I wanted to start with the social services because that's what we left off last time. So I think this is a really good conversation that we need to have. So I found these, a couple of definitions about social services, and this is the one sheet, two-sided, that I gave you tonight because this is where I learned all about how many different kinds of social services there are, and there are a lot that maybe we haven't thought of. Social service facility is a public or a nonprofit facility that provides counseling, therapy, or other social or human services to persons needing such services due to physical, mental, emotional, or other disabilities. Does not include schools, hospitals, clinics, daycare, or residential use. It may include information and referral services like counseling, skill development, aid through the provision of food or clothing, housing services, life skill and personal development, alcohol, drug, or substance abuse counseling, drop-in or activity space, foster care and adoption services, elderly services, tax preparation, meal delivery services. So that's just a little taste of the definitions. If you turn over in the various categories that we talked about at our last meeting, what I did here is I took each one of these uses that we have, like child and youth services, community food services, and came up with some examples of what those businesses, or what that would be. So for child and youth services, some of the things I found were like Boys and Girls Clubs, the YMCA, Scouts, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Junior Achievement, Toys for Tots, Children's Justice Center. For community food services, that would include Meals on Wheels, food pantries, soup kitchens. We all know what daycare services are, so I didn't provide examples of that. Emergency and other relief services, things like the Red Cross or Salvation Army. Other individual and family services could be things like the Humane Society, social action groups, ACLU, housing services, credit counseling, United Way, Disability Law Center, utility assistance like the HEAT program, National Ability Center, Wasatch Adaptive Sports. And then under community services, which was another category that I kind of discovered that we may need that or may want it, at least want to discuss it, would be things like Planned Parenthood, Utah Pride Center, Volunteers of America, Family History Centers, Goodwill, Desert Industries, Habitat for Humanity, a housing authority, or community housing trusts. So those are just some of the types of nonprofits that would be in this category. So with that, are there things in there that would concern you that we would not want to have, or do we lump them more into one category, kind of compress them into one category and provide examples of them? Or how do you feel about the categories as they stand right now?
Love the categories and the examples. Thank you. Under community, Goodwill, Desert Industries, didn't we cover that under thrift shops?
So
or
that
should
could,
we cover that under thrift
shops? It could
shops?
Be, but then this could be, those were just some of the nonprofits that came up. So I think it would be covered under thrift shops, but I think if what we should say is like community thrift shops would be, have some sort of a direction in the code to go to the section to look up that one.
Because they also provide like job training and job placement. Yep. It's not just a thrift shop.
And mine came to square footage of a DI or a Savers or whatever is a much bigger footprint than job training.
Sure. Or Goodwill is a much
right.
bigger, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But if you think about it right now, the food pantry actually, as I understand it, I haven't been there, run some thrift clothing operations as well.
The one that's right over here?
Yeah. So I don't know that they, if it's a thrift shop or if it's just they can get it donated. That I'm not clear on. But I know they do take clothing donations. to that level, I just wanted to remind everybody we're doing a food drive, and there's boxes out front if you wanted to donate some food supplies.
Thanks for the reminder.
Seems how I'm in charge of it, and it doesn't seem like it's getting very full.
I did have to empty out this one today.
Oh, yay. That's why it's not full then. Good. We'll talk about getting that.
And if you don't want to haul stuff down there, you can donate to them online.
Yes. Isn't that great that they provide that? I love that option.
I have a question about, so this definition that you gave us in the beginning, how it says does not include schools, hospitals, clinics, daycare, but then we have daycares listed?
Yes.
Does it matter?
So this is not the final draft of what the definition should be. It's just some definitions I found.
Oh, okay.
For social services.
So if we want to put daycares in there, it's kind of at our discretion.
Yeah, but we definitely don't, we don't want to have the residential use, so because we want to prohibit homeless shelters.
Okay.
So regarding the designations that are listed, the only thing I'd say is, you know, in the last meeting on the CS, we were trying to be a little more restrictive to just general commercial uses, and I think a lot of those would, for consistency's sake, ought to be no, with maybe the exception of community food services, because I think, again, that's something that people would use pretty regularly. It's somewhat akin to some of the other things you'd see at a shopping center, and maybe daycare. But some of the rest of these, I think, probably ought to be restricted to, you know, commercial general and maybe MD. Anyway, I'll just throw that out, because that's kind of the gist of what we were classifying last meeting.
So you would suggest to keep in, like, the ones with the food services
and daycare services?
And daycare.
That's just my own personal first crack at it, yeah, in CS.
And then make them permitted in the other zones. How does everyone feel about those?
I think the other thing that you could include would be like the thrift in CS.
And in some of them, we could limit this by size or by office mm-hmm. only. Like if it was a boys and or a Big Brother, Big Sister office,
right.
You know, and it wasn't like an activity center like a YMCA. So if we limited it by size because it's in a neighborhood, more neighborhood
yeah.
kind of
and because I think Commissioner Holbrook's point is valid, where, you know, you recognize the validity of, hey, this is like a shopping-esque thing, but you don't want this massive retail inside of a CSO. And then similar for community, you know, for much of those, you do NPPN would be my recommendation.
I would agree.
And so, like, on vocational, we would want to put NPPN.
Mm-hmm. And services for elderly, like, for much of those that wouldn't have a retail component, just shift it over one. So NPPN.
Or maybe instead of square footage, we could tie it to some kind of like non-retail.
Or, yeah, the office only or something like that.
Yeah. For the standards that you'll have to come up with later. Just as an idea.
Okay. Any more comments on that section, or should we move on? And going back to our list and your homework assignment with transportation and freight would be the next one. And what I, if I remember correctly, I think I asked you to go through it and come up with uses that you thought should be prohibited, that you had issues with.
So, Sherry, I notice a lot of these are C's.
Yeah.
Are we happy in certain instances to kind of stick with that because it depends on the scale and the scope and the nature of what they're doing?
Well, what I would say is it probably depends. Like if we were talking about air transportation, I would think if somebody wanted to have a helipad in the MD zone, right, that might be something that we would allow. But do we really want that? And if we don't, if we can't think of conditions we would apply to it when it came before you for a conditional use permit, then why would we have it as a conditional use?
So it's more that if it's, this is just a holdover from what was already there.
Yes.
And so it's just make it N unless you can come up with a reasonable set of standards. And then if somebody wanted to apply and change.
Right, because whether we leave, if we leave it a permitted use or a conditionally permitted use, I still got to come up with the standards to put in here.
Right.
So it, if I've got to come up with the standards to put it in here, then it could probably be permitted anyway, because we'll have the standards, right? And it won't be objective. It'll be, do you meet these minimum standards? Now, I don't know what those minimum standards would be for somebody who wanted to do a helipad. We're not going to have an airport, obviously. There's one right next door. We don't have that pressure. So I'm not really too worried about that. But I would think that it could happen that somebody wanted a heliport. And I can say that with some certainty because I know that somebody out there does it right now. I don't know that we've ever given anybody a heliport, but he has a video on his event center page that shows them landing a helicopter there.
Well, yeah, when the Diesel Brothers fly over my house, I'm aware of every time they fly over their house with their modified former Sikorsky or Blackhawk or whatever it is. So it's not pleasant.
So specifically on air traffic control, in light of this discussion, why would we want to allow that in a CG zone?
Yeah, why would we want, I agree. Why would we do air traffic control for our neighbor's airport? That doesn't even make sense. To me, that would be an N all the way across.
Seems like those are the type of things that if somebody wanted it, then they would need a code amendment.
Yeah, and they would come
and
in
we would
and
deal
make a
with
case
it then.
For it,
mm-hmm.
right?
If helicopter, it becomes, you know, much more in use than it is now.
Right.
Then we'll deal with it.
Because there would be a lot of regulation that needed to go into that and approvals from the FAA.
Rather than come up with the standards now.
Right. That's kind of where I'm coming from there.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. When someone comes up with a third-party drone service, they can come in for their code amendment. And
then we'll develop the standards.
Yeah, because you could probably see a use case where Amazon, if they decide to scale that out of their facility here, would then want to say, hey, we want to run drone operations out of the warehouse. What do we need to do? And then we go figure out how to deal with that.
Yep. And as far as like rail transportation goes, we have a railroad that goes through the MD zone. It might go through some MG. Can you pull up Google Earth with the zoning map on it? But I think it all goes through MD.
The one right in front of Big West.
Yeah, but I'm just not sure if it's MG or MD on that part. But there are the spurs that go into the refinery, and that definitely is MG. Not that we could ever come up with regulations that the railroad would ever pay any attention
to. Yeah, we're completely preempted there.
Yeah.
Well, if we get our wish, like we, you know, up at the county and actually got a front runner station.
Yeah, that would be nice. But yeah, I think we can put in the, I come up with some regulations. I was just bemoaning that the Union Pacific would not play nicely. Is they don't. Yeah, it looks like it's showing one side of the tracks are MD and one side are MG. Yeah. So it does not really showing me a zoning designation over where the railroad right-of-way is. But it does show that spur going into the MG zone for them. So moving on to trucking, to Mackenzie and I's opinion on this is, for us, there's not really much difference whether the freight trucking is local or whether it's long distance. We're not really sure why long distance freight trucking would be conditional and not permitted when local trucking is permitted. Trucking is permitted, and it's what we have a lot of businesses in the MD zone already.
Probably when that was drafted, the long distance ones were quite a bit larger.
Yeah, but, like 26 footers.
Yeah, nowadays, local and nowadays the locals are big too. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
probably.
Well, and look at how big, you know, FedEx is.
Yeah.
Apparently my heart rate is high right now. Don't know why. urban transit systems. So to me, if we have a bus route, that's an urban transit system, and it should be able to go through all of these zones. That seems like a no-brainer to me. Those should be permitted. And the same with interurban, that would be like the front runner.
I had circled armored car services as well. In CG is just not permitted.
Okay.
But rather than conditional.
Charter bus industry probably need to be cleaned up too.
Should be permitted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was thinking the same with a school or employee bus. Mm-hmm. And then moving down to, let's see, where were armored cars? Yeah. Not in the CG zone. That was.
And I had the same thing for special needs and taxi of just not being conditional. Seems in MD. Seems pretty straightforward.
Does what classifies an urban transit system again? Is that like a?
So I think the way that this is written is urban transportation system would be like, because it says urban, interurban, and rural. So to me, that's interurban means going between. So that would be like front runner.
Mm-hmm.
And urban transportation, that would be like UTA buses.
Do we need to add a category for operations for like Lime or Bird?
I think we do. I think and those stuff would be under the next section, which is the support activities for transportation. So okay. These would be the, when we talk about, like the first ones are, we already said no to air traffic control. I don't think that other airport operations doesn't make any sense to me that why they would be permitted in our city at all. When you look down to, I think when you get into the all other support activities, that's what needs to be defined, and or it could be the fees. Well, the it depends on what we're doing with this freestanding parking lots and garages. So those, are they related to garage spaces for these transportation companies, or are they related to parking for next to commercials? So we either need to define those, but I think we need to have both categories. We need to have like service shops for transportation systems, right? I think that would be the category that we need to define that's not really defined. And I think that those are the things that we would look at that would fall under other support. So I think that's where we would look at repair and storage facilities for transit systems. And I think those should only be in the MD zone.
Agree.
And then probably we put something in here about logistics operations. So they could have offices for logistics. Because that would fall under other, for road transportation or rail transportation.
I didn't understand pipeline transportation.
Okay, so pipeline transportation would be the, like, what's that famous?
Reg station that's down in front of the...
Yeah.
Starbucks and that, yeah.
Yeah, the big pipelines, the crude pipelines or the ethanol pipelines.
Compressor station, it could be a tank storage, it could be anything that's a surface use that's incidental to pipeline transportation. I'm an old pipeliner.
So we would eliminate a whole bunch of rail traffic if we had a pipeline of crude that came right to the refineries instead of trucked it all in, which could happen someday. At one point, we had a company that wanted to put in a rail receiving station across the street from Big West Oil, where they would have tanks that would store the ethanol instead of the ethanol right now gets delivered in the big black rail tanks. And then it's stored in that. And Big West takes those delivery of like 12 of those tankers. They take it across the street and store it on their rails that are in the spur. And then whenever they need more ethanol in their tank, they bring those back and forth. And that's always the big delay that you're waiting for when they're going back and forth, is when they're loading the empty carts onto Union Pacific and getting the full carts loaded, or when they're moving them from their storage area to dump them into their tank. So we had a company that had approached us at one point that came in and wanted to do an area on the north side of Center Street where they would build ethanol tanks and then build a pipeline in the railroad right-of-way that went up to the refineries north and went south to Big West and then to Chevron. And then all of the ethanol cars could be delivered on that side, not foul the crossing while they were being loaded and unloaded off of Union Pacific. The cars would then be emptied into the tanks and then distributed to all of the refineries for their ethanol use through this pipeline instead of being delivered and stored in the tanker cars. And they did, that's how I know what the study was. We made them do a traffic study to go down there and sit and figure out when the biggest delays were and what they were doing it during those delays. And so that's how I know what that is. But then they couldn't get some federal funding that they were looking for, and so they ended up going and building a pipeline from, I want to say, somewhere out in Vernal back into Colorado to deliver ethanol into Colorado refineries instead of into Utah refineries, because they got some funding in that direction.
I didn't realize that's why, like, that was the source of the delay, is the ethanol delivery and transit, not the crude.
Yeah, no, it's not the crude, it's ethanol. So when the problem is, when Union Pacific comes and they have the cars, sometimes those ethanol cars are in the middle of the train, mm-hmm. right? So they're fouling, the train is so long that it's fouling the crossing while they unhook those cars, put them on the spur, and then take them on, and then Big West takes those onto their delivery area, and then they have to add the cars that are empty and take them on their way. And so that's what they're doing when it's fouling the line and why it's taking so long.
All because Iowa votes first. <laughs> 10% ethanol blend.
Wow.
Okay.
So a lot of times what's incidental to pipeline transportation is storage. I personally like the idea of the title of it being pipeline transportation storage, because you can have breakout tanks, you could have liquefied natural gas facility that's storing, extremely cold liquefied. That's actually going on in the Salt Lake County. But there's all kinds of things that could be to it. It's not necessarily just transportation. It could be the storage of the products.
Wasn't there another category for pipelines that we talked about a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, well, there's bulk plants and terminals. I know that. That's coming up, I think. We ought to look at that and make sure it's not duplicate.
And I think that same group was talking about a waxy crude pipeline from the Uinta Basin to Salt Lake City. That, at that time, when they were trying to do that, they had to go through, they would have to go through Summit County, and that proved to be too difficult for them politically, because that was at the time I was living up there, so I remember that. And it was right around the same time that the ethanol people came in to talk to us. And when they got all that resistance, then that's when they decided
about
to.
About 10 years ago, roughly?
Maybe
so
seven,
now they've switched to
seven,
trying
eight.
To bring it to Price through Indian Canyon, their railroad. And they haven't had much luck with that either.
Well, and there's a hearing before the Supreme Court about that railway.
So has anyone ever suggested that Big West be required to schedule those?
They have
the
no
morning?
Control over when
the
Union Pacific delivers them.
Right. That's, where the traffic delay is not enough to.
It would be nice if we could. And they would, but they won't. Because the system is too big for them to say, we're going to hold this train down in, Salt Lake somewhere until they can deliver at 9 p.m. instead of at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
Like, they just won't do that.
Yeah.
And whether we like it or not, the railroads were all here before our roads were here. We built our roads across their railroads, and so they have the right-of-way, per se. And they are very strong politically. They have lots of rules in place to protect them.
I'm no lawyer, but I think there's a general principle of first in time, first in right.
Yeah.
Prior rights.
Works with water, too.
So, I guess to Ron's point, what should we do with pipeline transportation in general?
Well, I think we should permit it, but we should have regulations, and then we should also have some regulations for the terminal stations and storage.
Because that would be ideal if we could, if all it is ethanol transfer, and you could put the holding tanks on the north, and then you pipe it under,
It was a really great idea.
That solves 90%. Was this 10 years ago?
It was 7 or 8, because I've only been here 9, so it's got to be about 7 years ago, I would say. I don't remember the exact time frame. I know it was before COVID. It might have been 2018, 2019, somewhere in there, and I was really excited about it. I thought that this is a great idea, and they were gonna buy Copart, so all those cars were going to go away. Well, the cars are all gone now, but that's where they were going to go.
I would just comment on the standards. I think there's a wide variety of things that could fall under the heading of pipeline transportation and storage. So company I work for, we actually proposed in Indio, California, doing a circular track oil unloading facility. You'd transport oil on a pipeline, then you'd have storage tanks, and you'd have loading facilities, and then you'd take it across the Los Angeles Basin in pipeline. But anyway, just... this is an example of one of the many, many, many. There's just all kinds of things that could show up in that category. So I think the key thing is to keep it out of anything other than the manufacturing type sectors.
So it's the because of the type of material you would be piping, the standards would vary so much.
Typically, they're flammable, combustible, hazardous, potentially explosive. I mean, there's a lot of things that can go along with that. But I'm not saying prohibit in the manufacturing. I think that's certainly. Goes right along with what's going on in a lot of the MG district, and could potentially be fine in the MD. The hard thing is, I think, writing the standards for the MD district, because I'm just going to say that there'll be somebody who thinks up something new, and it may not fit.
So could that be a C, one of the instances where we want it to be?
Yeah, if we want to just have a few C's, we can certainly do that. Yeah. Still have to come up with the regulations, though.
That's
true.
I guess
that would be my recommendation, is in the MD, keep a C.
Okay.
And, would you do it for MG as well? Just do C for both like it is now?
I have no problem with that. I think we've tended to be pretty permissive with allowing a lot of things in the MD. I see a lot of P's, so. But, yeah, I think a C is fine.
Okay.
Okay. I like it. Let's see. How about the freight transportation arrangement? I think those should be P's, packing and crating, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I had packing and crating as both P's in MD and MG, and repossession services as not permitted in CS and CG.
Agreed.
I also had commercial air, rail, and water transportation equipment rental and leasing as not permitted in CS.
I would say in CG too.
Agree.
And then when we're talking about freestanding parking lots, I think this should be defined to be adjacent to, I mean, this should be public parking, I guess, or retail, associated with retail or residential structures. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Because we're getting, you know, we're getting freestanding garages with these two buildings that are going in next to
Town Center.
Yeah, 130 East. And so I think there should be some regulations about them, though. There should be something about height. There should be some things about screening on the main level. And there's a lot of good regulations out there. So there's rules that we can come up with that
Provo,
will make them acceptable.
When we were walking down in Provo at APA, that like the parking garages had a nice facade that you couldn't even tell it was a parking garage.
Right. So there are things that can be done with that. So I have no problem putting P's on that and getting the standards in place so that they could be allowed, especially as their accessories to some other use, or either they could be freestanding if they were public transportation. I mean, if we were able to get a parking garage and have a nice transit stop on the front runner, and you had two or three stories, I don't think that'd be a bad thing to have over there. Not saying it's going to happen. Okay, should we talk about utilities and public services? So the next section, the first part of it talks about power and generation. So I didn't really think that we wanted to have power generation necessarily in any of our zones. We have it not permitted anything, but now you had said something before, Ron, I think, about something that maybe the refinery does. Do they generate their own power for their site?
I think I was mentioning to Commissioner Marsh that they, I know one of the refineries has cogeneration for nat gas to run their own power. I mean, you see the condensers out there. I don't know which.
So maybe as an accessory to their use.
Mm-hmm.
So because I don't have a problem with people in the MD zone having solar panels on their roofs or solar panels on their parking carports. That's a really great use. So they're generating power by solar, but it's not, it's for use on that property.
My example was for the Tesoro refinery down in Salt Lake, right next to the garage. I know for a fact that they built a natural gas small compressor station so they could add their own generation there. So it's right next to the garage, if anybody frequents that.
So one land use that kind of scared me for a minute was when we had, I think we did a conditional use permit for it, but they made, what was it, down in the river bend, and they made some sort of power generator where they were taking water and they were turning the water into hydrogen.
Electrolysis.
And so when we started reading about how much these things produced and how much water they used, I was scared to death until we got more information that it wasn't actually, they weren't running those, they were building the machines and selling those machines. So they were building the machines that do that, that's what they were manufacturing. They weren't bringing those machines in to use millions of gallons of water to create hydrogen. So I want to make sure we address something like that, because we want to make sure that these don't have huge water impacts that we can't support. And so those are some of the standards that I want to put in. Like if they use an unusually amount of water that we do not have sufficient supply for, that we have the ability to say no and not give them a license to do that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about nuclear briefly because I think Commissioner Holbrook and I mentioned there, you know, there's newer nuclear technology potentially coming online in the next decade, but as to whether or not we want to go through the effort of...
Well, I'm not sure I would want to go through the effort of coming up with the
right.
standards right now. I'd rather if somebody
right,
wanted
for them
to come in here and
for
do that,
and,
that they came yeah. in and applied for a code so amendment, and we then could
on,
identify this.
Along standards. The energy generation line, there is also geothermal, so there's also, there's you know, distributed geothermal. There's a lot of really cool research happening with geothermal down in central Utah that's connected to the U. So that might be something when we're talking about energy generation with wind and solar and, you know, doing conditional use permitting for both. Right now it's and in the MD, and I think it's unlikely you'll ever see wind just because it's not really the right area. You could potentially see distributed solar, whether or not that's for on-site or utility scale,
yeah.
you know, depends. But I think it might be worthwhile to look at the geothermal piece of it, especially because
okay.
we're right next to Warm Spring, and that might be, you know, there could be some commercial viability for that at some point in the future.
Okay.
I don't know if that's even if there's even a section of that that's within our city limits.
And I would put that as same as helicopters and nuclear. If somebody wants a geothermal,
sure,
have them do a code amendment, come up with the standards then.
Sure, you could do, yeah.
I just, you know, it's so unique that you're going to spend a lot of time trying to come
yeah.
up with standards.
Yeah, I agree. I guess what I was saying is if there's already a standard that's easily applicable somewhere.
If there's something easy and I find it, then. But
that,
if I have
yeah.
to dig very far, if I have to dig too hard on some of these things, I'm going to come back to you and say, I just couldn't come up with a set of standards that I felt comfortable with, and so
mm-hmm.
then I will recommend it.
Because like we were talking about with the parking, like there's plenty of places that have the, you know, facades for parking structures to make them not look like parking structures and make it a nice thing,
yep.
and I'm sure that's easy, you know, it's easy to pull that. And so if there's something
yep.
similar for geothermal or...
Yeah, as I'm looking at all this, if it's right there, and
mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, those are the things that somebody else has already spent the time researching it, so I agree.
I would just comment there's a nexus between geothermal and that category we covered earlier with mining and support activities to the extent that you have to lease that, like if you're on federal land,
mm-hmm.
just like you would have to lease any other mineral or oil and gas. So, you know, maybe geothermal extraction belongs under that mineral one as one of the listed activities. And I tend to agree with Commissioner Ward that probably prohibited. If somebody comes in and there is a geothermal resource, it'll be worth the time and effort to take a detailed
mm-hmm.
look at that and go through code change.
Okay. I was not sure about electrical power and natural gas distribution, unless this is defined as by size of lines, right? Like, because you're distributing natural gas in every zone in the city, right, to the customers. So I'm not really sure of why this is written the way it is, but it doesn't specifically say. So to me, it should either specifically say, and if what we think we will be talking about is other than consumer delivery, we would probably define it something like consumer delivery would be permitted in all zones, but the like the big power lines and the substations, I think you would only want to have those in the MD and MG zone. We wouldn't want to have a huge transmission line going right through on Highway 89 or on Redwood Road. Did everybody kind of agree with that? Same with water distribution. That seems like that would just be a local end user delivery. On sewage treatment facilities on the next page, I would strongly say we should still keep that as conditional and come up with standards for it. So I don't want to see any expansion of the sewer treatment plant without significant review done by somebody other than me. Share the blame, you know. And some of these other ones, I think, too, some of the waste treatment stuff. These are some of the categories that I think should stay conditional with standards or go to not permitted.
So Sherry, on the utilities and public services, I think just across the board, with maybe the exception of post office, I think the commercial shopping ought to be no across the board. We have a number of conditionals, we have a number of P's, but again, just for consistency with what we've been trying to preserve use for on the CS zone.
And what I would say, like another one would be wireless communication. I wouldn't have a problem with small wireless, but I would have a problem, might have a problem with big cellular tower, a tall 60-foot tower in the CS zone, but I wouldn't have a problem with the small cellular because that technology is just attached to streetlights or the sides of buildings.
So it's you're talking about like an incidental to the primary use, so yes. It's just a tower that's there?
Yes.
Well, and I remember reading that Salt Lake City ran into this with the 5G deployment that was going on where the Verizon or whoever had basically right away across all Salt Lake City with whatever service agreement they signed, so they could basically deploy towers wherever they wanted to. Now, granted, these aren't the massive cell towers, but they're still like the 15, 20-foot small cylindrical towers that you know, if you look for them, they're painted black. They're all over Salt Lake. And so I think that might be something that we may want to...
So we have a small wireless chapter, mm-hmm. because there was a thing that came out several years ago. It was around, you were here when I started that morning, 2020-21, where we were required by the federal government to address small cellular. We even had Verizon come in, and they were going to put some up on the hillside because of the dead spots that they mm-hmm. have up around Eaglewood. And then they went away and never came back. I adopted the ordinances, and they never came back. So there's a whole process for them and what they have to look like and how tall they can be and what color. But we never signed an agreement, a franchise agreement with anybody. They just were inquiring about it. And then when I followed up with them maybe a year ago or a year and a half ago, they basically told us that with most people now and Google Fiber, and they're doing their wireless through their internet router. And so there's less of a need for more cellular towers on the hillside. People are fine. Yeah, that's a good thought on moving that. And then in that prohibited category, we had nuclear power, steam and air conditioning supplies, solid or hazardous waste. I don't think we want a landfill. Waste treatment and disposal, solid waste landfill as combustors or incinerators. I think we've had our fill of incinerators. Let me make sure that's not allowed. And then it starts getting into broadcasting and telecommunications, which we can further define if this is meaning towers. That's a different thing than if it's a radio station, but a radio station would have a tower usually right there. So does anybody have any strong feelings about any of those?
I just don't think it ought to be the primary use in our commercial zones.
Agreed. Okay. So the next section starts wholesale trade, and what I provided for you there were some definitions about wholesale trade, how it's defined by the NAICS, the durable goods, the non-durable goods, and the wholesale electronic markers. So it's divided into three categories. And I guess my printout and your printout probably doesn't have, oh wait, I'm looking at the wrong sheet. So I went and colored them. So I tried to look at the ones that already have the same N's and P's in every category, for places that we could compress them into just whether it's durable goods or whether it's non-durable goods. And if nobody has any objections to any of these, it seems like we can just put these all together in wholesale, because I don't think we need to say all these various different kinds of kind of wholesales. Now, maybe we don't want to have coal wholesalers. That might be one we would want to prohibit. That's dirty and, you know, mineral and ore wholesalers seems like a something we might not want to have. But other than that, I didn't really have many of these that I thought I was, that I really raised any eyebrows to me in the wholesale categories.
Was there other, like...
Except for maybe recyclable materials, too.
Yeah, like recycled asphalt or other, like, building materials. I know we had briefly mentioned, like, the cement.
Right. So right now we have recyclable, under recyclable material wholesale, which is conditional in the MD and MG, and that would be like metal scrap, glass scrap, paper, plastic scrap, for reuse in manufacturing, construction, or other applications. This would also include auto wreckers who dismantle motor vehicles and resell scrap materials rather than selling the used parts. So for me, I would rather define it to not allow the wreckers and dismantling and that kind of junk. I think I don't necessarily would have a problem if, let's say, we had a transfer station or something and they were recycling paper and plastic products, sorting and then packaging and then redistributing it. But it can be kind of messy too. So
maybe that's a standard of indoor versus outdoor. Because I'm the same way. I would, if I can't see it.
Right.
Well, then there's hazardous materials, the waste disposal that goes along with auto wrecking.
So maybe prohibit the metal scrapping stuff, but allow the other plastic and that if it's indoor. Does that sound reasonable? Let's see, and the non-durable goods, there were farm product raw materials that I was wondering about. So that's engaged in the distribution of farm products except grain and field beans, livestock, raw milk, live poultry, and fresh fruits and vegetables. So I'm not really 100% sure what farm product raw materials would be, because they specifically accept out grain and field beans, livestock. Obviously, we don't want live poultry. But to me, it just seemed like maybe we'd make that an N.
Yeah.
Plastic materials and basic resin are basic forms and shape wholesalers. So these are plastic materials and resins and unsupported plastic film sheeting, rod, tube, and other basic forms of shapes. I can't see any reason why we would necessarily care about that and wouldn't make that a permitted use. What about chemicals? What kind of, do we want to prohibit chemicals?
Chemical or wholesaling?
I don't know.
I think it depends on the chemical.
Or we could suggest specific wholesale items that are chemical or produce odors be conditional. Chemicals do worry me. Yeah. Hazardous chemicals, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's just odor, too. I mean, you're talking about bulk storage of potentially hazardous materials. There can be all kinds of public safety concerns, too, in case of accidental release. I mean, it depends on what it is. You get something in there that could have all kinds of stuff, just like the refinery.
Let's say not. I would say not permitted for chemicals.
I think it falls in that same category that I'm a fan of, which is an N, and we'll deal with it later.
I like it.
If an applicant had a...
So in this category, it also had the petroleum bulk stations and terminals, which we talked about in the transportation section. So I think this is just kind of a... over in the wrong spot to me. Both of those two. Let's see. Then we had some of these other wholesalers that were already permitted.
Because there's also the other chemical in allied product. Right. So, to mirror the other one.
To me, I think we just go with the N on this too.
Yeah.
Because it shouldn't be any other. It should just all be an N. And then the last page is the warehousing and storage facilities. So I'm personally think that general warehousing and storage should not be in the CG zone.
Yeah, the first one, no conditional on CG, just not permitted.
Yeah. And then self-storage units, we have the storage unit overlay zone, and so all of that zone is MD. There is no self-storage unit overlay zone in the MG zone. And we just need to make that clear that this where the storage overlay zone is. So they can be permitted, but only in that area. There are very few areas that allow self-storage. So it's basically between... Yeah, can you click that one on?
I wasn't aware we had an overlay.
Yeah, see those little green that just popped up?
Oh.
So between the railroad tracks there and then that one right there. So we have some other storage unit facilities that were built, predated the storage unit overlay zone, but this serves us quite well when new storage units want to go in and we tell them they have to be in these areas only. Because storage units really don't have a lot of value for the city. They don't generate property tax. They're just square cement boxes. They're very low. They generate very little property tax, and they generate no sales tax, but take up lots of room.
And I think they can also sometimes be associated with crime and police response.
We have a lot of code enforcement issues with people operating certain businesses out of certain legal and certain illegal businesses
or living in the storage units. That can happen. But if we didn't have this storage unit overlay zone, we would have potentially storage units up on the corner of 1100 and Redwood, because that property that was going to be come and go before all of that happened, I was constantly getting calls of people wanting to put storage units there. Prime real estate, but storage units.
Oh, everything. Storage units are big money makers for the property owners. If you want to get rich, like Robert Kiyosaki, build storage units. Just read his book. And that's pretty much the end of those charts.
Sure, can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. So one of the categories that I've seen listed alongside this is the highway zone. But anyway, just a general question about the Highway 89 zone. Are there some changes that we think are warranted based on your recent experience? So, for example, there's a pawn shop dealer, which, interestingly enough, I think's on the north Salt Lake side, even though I thought it was in Bountiful. But anyway, if that were to close, my bet would be that we'll get another automotive dealer in there. But anyway, the general question is, so that's a hypothesis, but anyway, my question is there changes that we ought to be making at the same time on what's allowed in the Highway 89 zone?
Absolutely.
Based on the conversation we just had, like the first thing that came to my mind was, can we create a auto dealership overlay?
Well, one of the things that will apply in this change, so when we look at the standards for auto dealerships, and we put that use into that chapter 19, the special uses, that is going to relate to any automobile dealer in any zone, not just these zones. And so we can put in regulations that regulate the dealerships that we have on Highway 89. If we put in regulations that regulate pawn shops, but that we might want to take it out anyway of the CH zone, that's a change you might want to make as a land use, but we can definitely regulate put in standards for auto dealers that they have to have a certain lot size. They can only have so many cars based on the lot size that they have for display area. That's some of the issue we run into is we have them come in with their parking plan and they tell us, oh, I'm going to fit five cars here and I have five employee and customer parking spaces. And the next thing we know, they have 15 cars. But it sure would be nice if we could say, hey, you have to have a minimum of 1 acre. None of these more little quarter acre dumpy lots that they're putting 10, 15, 20, 50 cars on. That one put like 50 on, I swear. It was crazy. Blew our minds when we had to meet with them. And I was like, I don't understand. You said you were only going to have this many and you look at how many you have.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm really focused on this. Is there any other overlays besides storage units?
We have a sign overlay zone.
Okay.
So we will talk about signs in January as well, because that's one of the mandates from the city council we need to talk about.
Okay.
We need to update signs for freedom of speech kind of things, issues that have been come up. But it's a good opportunity to fix it for the rest of the issues. But yes, we do have a sign overlay zone. So there are specific signs that are allowed. Billboards are only allowed in the sign, the S2 overlay zone.
Okay.
It's S3, isn't it?
S3 overlay zone, which is basically along the interstate.
Anything other than those two? Sorry, this is just new to me, 2 years in that we have.
I want to remind you guys, so we have the sensitive lands overlay zone, which is mostly just the hillside and then over where we have higher liquefaction and Great Salt Lake's bed type thing. But that's typically not going to be on your radar. What we do have that's not an overlay zone but a federally mandated item is the drinking water wellhead protection zone. I don't know. There's like 10
drinking water
W's.
Source protection.
You're missing one W, I promise.
Is there an overlay zone associated with Woods Cross Airport?
Yes.
Kinda, yeah.
Sort okay. Yeah. We
made it.
We don't have it on a map like an overlay zone, but we have some airport overlay zoning regulations. So, and that relates to the uses and the heights of buildings that are in the flight path.
Okay. And once again, I'm so sorry. This is just so new to me. Where did the storage unit one come about that's so specific?
It was here before I got here, so I don't know. I think they felt like they were getting a proliferation of storage units. So they decided to do a storage unit overlay zone and say they're only allowed in these areas.
And are these things common? Like, does Bountiful have numerous overlay?
They could. I've seen it in many places. Yeah, I've seen it in different places. It's not usually ideal, but let's say you wanted to allow storage units somewhere, and so that somewhere would be the MD zone, but you didn't want it to be the whole MD zone, right? So you're going to do an overlay zone to say this is actually where the storage unit should be. You want to allow you allow billboards along the freeway, but that's the MD zone, but you don't want them to be on Redwood Road.
Sure.
So you would do a storage overlay or a sign overlay zone to say these are the types of zones. Yeah, so that's kind of where those ideas come from.
And creating these, are they a public hearing?
Mm-hmm. Just they're style? Part of the zoning ordinance.
Like I'm thinking of like the RV parks.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can create an RV park overlay zone.
You could do a hospitality overlay zone where you had hotels and stuff.
Interesting. Okay.
You can also be as radical as to say, do an overlay that allows duplexes in every residential zone without having to change the underlying zoning.
No,
I'm not saying that's an ideal thing. It's just you can do anything with an overlay zone.
No, it makes you think as we go through some of these that
there could be a
being town, very specific
for that fact. There could be a town center overlay zone where, in addition to the uses that are allowed in the underlying zone, you would be allowed to do these things in the town center overlay zone. That's just another set of regulations that would be applicable in that area. We have a few specialized overlay zones that were granted down on Center Street when they changed some zoning from MD to CG. And so they did these special use overlay zones with a few properties. Not my favorite thing, but yeah.
So I want to interject a comment, and this won't come as a surprise to Sherry or Mackenzie, but I still don't agree with the completeness of our existing geohazards overlay map, and that's an issue that goes back to day one. And I'll just remind everybody that the state's geologic surveys defined a lot more geohazards, including surface rupture zones along the fault that crosses along Valley View and lots of other things. So anyway, I won't.
And I can tell you that is foremost on the mind of the city engineer. And if she could stop dealing with failing retaining walls, she might get to that. But that is something she hits me up about every couple months.
And even if she really wants to get that refined. Even if we can't
define the
standards
changes
on what we want for all of those, at least we ought to be transparent and acknowledge in the code that those geohazards have been identified and they've been mapped, and that they need to be addressed at some level. I just think even just a generic thing, but you know, that's not the main issue. But what I want to come back is, for purposes of what we're doing now, and we're under some deadlines, do we want to get anything done relative to the highway zone or not? So I appreciate what you said earlier, but I'm just trying to figure out in conjunction with this, yes or no, or?
I think that will come, let's do that after February. After we get this through, then we can, I think then what we should do is sit down and make a list and prioritize what code changes you think we should pursue, you know, that we all need, that we all will help, because we have our ideas too. I have a whole list on the whiteboard in my office. and then you may have some priorities and things that you would like to address. So then we could go over that and you could help us prioritize where to put our focus on. And then we can, you know, just tackle them one at a time, or group them together that ones that can be tackled. Probably the easiest would be to go, okay, where's the low-hanging fruit? Which ones can we get done first and relatively easily? And the highway commercial zone is probably some low-hanging fruit that won't take very long to fix.
I'll third Ron and Ryan's comments. I think it's a great idea to revisit CH.
Great. Okay, Mackenzie, do you want to go back to the slideshow? Okay, so on the action update, we wanted to let you know that Commissioner Stone and Commissioner Marsh have now been reappointed. So their new terms start officially January 1st. It sure makes our lives easy when you guys want to continue to serve, because you're already trained and you're doing a great job, and we really appreciate you. I just want you to know that, because it's hard finding new commissioners and it's hard interviewing people. It's tough too. Sometimes you get two or three candidates, you're like, oh, I like all of them. Why can't I have all of them? I only have one position. And that was the case when we interviewed Commissioner Marsh, and I'm like, oh, there's three people here that we really like. And so we found places for them on some other boards. So that's pretty exciting. But it is hard to go through that. And so it's good to have stability on the Planning Commission. I appreciate you all. Just some staff things that we've done that was approved last week at the City Council meeting. We did a boundary line agreement with the city's property at Palmquist Park and the Dibble property. They did a survey of their property as they're preparing to do a minor subdivision and discovered that the wall that everybody thought is the property line and has treated as the property line, kind of the property line actually zigzags back and forth. So we were able to enter into a boundary line agreement where they get everything on that side of the wall and we get everything on the east side of the wall. So that was the gist of that. And then they also donated additional right-of-way, dedicated additional right-of-way, so that someday the sidewalk could be in the same alignment with the sidewalk that's in front of the church on Center Street. Because, you know, if you ever take that sidewalk, you go up past the church and then you zig out and then up to Palmquist Park. So someday it could be moved back and all be in a straight line. And then the City Council last week adopted some resolutions to split the Parks, Trails, Arts, and Recreation Advisory Board into three citizen committee boards, one being Arts, one being Trails and Active Transportation, and the third one being Civic Events. And so they'll be looking for people to serve on those boards. If you have any friends or neighbors that you think would be good candidates for that, we'd appreciate you sharing that opportunity with them so that they can apply. And the other thing that I did not go in here and put on the action update, but what I wanted to just mention was the general plan workshop that we did last week with the city council. After the meeting, I had a conversation with one of the city council members. She was particularly confused with some of the economic data and the maps that were presented. And so I wanted to just kind of recap that for you for just a second and explain what the situation is and how it was done. So Susie Becker, who made that presentation, she wasn't the one that did the study. It was a gentleman named Eric Rice, who works for her in her in that in Zions at Zions. But what he did was look at opportunity properties. So he looked at properties that were underdeveloped or maybe were prime for redevelopment, had old buildings and things like that, vacant or underdeveloped or, you know, dilapidated buildings. And then he looked at it from a perspective of, if I was a developer, what kind of land uses might I want to put on these properties? And then he plugged that into his model based upon what the value of the land is and what it would cost to build that land use and evaluate that and then come up with those charts that showed what would be feasible economically and what wouldn't be feasible economically. Then that information is given to our consultants at Landmark, and they come up with a land use scenario. So saying, let's, if we think about this area and we put this land use here, they don't want to come up with a land use scenario that is completely unfeasible, that no developer would ever build because it doesn't make sense economically. And so those maps aren't that he created for that. They aren't the be end or end all or even really going to be a big part of the general plan. They're just part of the background study that helps us frame our ideas for where land, what our future land use map should be. Does that help explain maybe what they, what she was trying to say and in a much more concise and quicker way? Because I thought it was the way I understood it.
Yeah, that's why I understood it too. I thought it was an interesting update. What it suggested to me is, in order to develop the town center, it's not going to be, you know, bulldozed and raised and build it from scrap. It's, people are going to have to be rather clever about how to repurpose buildings and things like that. That's what it suggests to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's more that there could be done to promote that idea, but that, you know, like, you know, buying the land, bulldozing it, and putting up something totally new if the land's expensive. But anyway, it was an interesting discussion.
Right.
I'm still a bit of a skeptic about if we're, you know, I think the idea about developing Redwood and all that stuff, that's great. I think it seems like there's infinite possibilities of things that will go there. The only thing that didn't come up in that meeting is resource constraints. So, you know, like, you know, at one point we're agonizing about water use and we're down to watering our lawns one day a week. You know, what are truly the upper bounds on water use? Are we going to continue to carve out more water for, you know, like a hotel, multi-story hotel, from just asking people to cut back on how much they're watering the lawns? But, you know, I'm not asking you to answer that question, but I do think we need to think about the constraints, you know,
yes,
particularly water.
And that's why water is also part of the general plan. So they'll be looking at the water element that we have right now and analyzing that in as background information about what they can.
I was just surprised in that meeting, nobody, I was going to bring it up, but I didn't want to participate. But anyway, I thought it was interesting, but I am a big skeptic about tying together, you know, having this kind of dumbbell configuration of town center with Center Street in the middle with the railroad and all that stuff. I don't know. If that's somehow the idea that that's going to be the main thoroughfare of our town center, I think we're up in the night.
I don't think it should be the main thoroughfare, but I do think there should be connections between it. So I think it's how do we do it in a thoughtful way that at least gives some alternative to being in your car.
As long as we don't call it all one part and parcel the same, I mean, I agree with that, but somehow if that is part of the town center, I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it as part of the town center. I see it as its own.
You just need a row of taverns.
I like the
connecting.
So you just do a pub crawl along Center Street. That'll get you from one side to the other.
I also thought it was interesting comments from some of the city council people in particular, kind of a very negative outlook on retail and restaurants, which I don't see when I go to Bountiful and Salt Lake, which is where I have to go for a lot of retail and restaurants. So I actually kind of question that negative thing. But that whole notion that the legislature is ready to step on, you know, local planning and all that and override it and put in multifamily and all this stuff. I thought that was interesting. I suppose that part's true.
They threaten that every year. They threaten, the legislature makes all sorts of threats every year, and we work really hard to minimize the impacts of those threats when they want to do silly things that take our control away. So we monitor it very closely, and I work with the Land Use Task Force. Ken works with the Legislative Policy Committee and very closely to keep track and tabs on what they're doing and make sure we have input in it as well.
My main point would be I appreciate those joint sessions with the City Council. I always learn something, and it causes me to think a little bit more about what we're doing here. But anyway, I appreciate it when we do get those opportunities.
Yeah, they're great. I thought that was a pretty good workshop last week. I liked it.
I like Ron's description of dumbbell approach of that's very much what it is.
That was a total mischaracterization on my part. I'm sure that I
made
that up.
But it is shaped like a dumbbell.
Yeah, it's shaped like that. The other thing, I'll share it with everyone just because it's really changed my outlook on water. It was either last year or the year before at the APA conference, I attended a class on water consumption and the difference between water usage and water recycling, basically. You know, as we use water in our houses, when we shower, when we use the bathroom, things like that, that water does almost at 100% get sent down the drain to the sewer, to the water treatment plant. The water treatment plant treats it and it goes to the Great Salt Lake that we're all very worried about, versus the water we use on our lawns is consumption. It soaks into the ground, stays there, and we don't get to use it anymore. And they had some very good data in this class about the water a quarter acre uses on a quarter acre lot with one single house on it consumes more water than 16 townhomes on that quarter acre lot because of the type of water they're using and where it finally ends up. And so, I don't know, it's changed my outlook on when I see big apartment complexes or I see the idea of a hotel, knowing that that hotel will likely consume less water than residential quarter acre lot houses on that same land helps me with that knee-jerk reaction of, you know, big means more water. But what we actually need the water for, it seems to benefit us that way.
I worry a lot about big industrial water users too, because those are something that you guys don't ever see. The amount of water that Big West Oil uses is staggering. But I would also add to the water that water that we do water our lawns with, some of that recharges the water aquifers too. It's a very complicated system for sure.
Yeah, to further the point, whenever you remove agricultural use and replace with residential use, it's a massive water saving. But
yeah,
there's not a lot of agriculture left within city limits. But
all the agriculture is upstream from us.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and that's all I have on the update. Did you have anything?
Right, thank you.
Are you clicking and I'm clicking at the same time? Okay. This is the schedule for next year. I think the only one we wanted to highlight was on November 11th, that would be Veterans Day, which is a Tuesday on this next year. And so we bumped that meeting one day to Wednesday, if everyone is okay with that. Because we won't be here on that Tuesday.
And please let me know if you see any potential conflicts with, I don't know, holidays or elections or anything like that. I'm pretty sure I caught everything, but never fails.
Could you email this to us?
Yes.
Just the slide. I'd appreciate it.
I definitely can. The city council will likely be adopting this schedule and will be posting it the first meeting in January. Can I send it then?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
I want the final one.
Yes.
Just in case anything changes. Okay. That's all we have for you.
All right, let's approve the minutes for November 26th. Any changes or modifications?
Not for me, look good. Prepared to offer a motion. Commissioner Jorgensen, offer a motion to approve the meeting minutes for the November 26, 2024 Planning Commission meeting as drafted.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
We have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes. We are adjourned.